Okay, well, you're good. We got everything on the screen. We're in Brachos Yud Amud Beis, rolling along. We're in the middle of Chizkiyahu, who is deathly ill because he didn't get married, and he said, "Listen, he had lots of merits. He's davening Hashem. I've done lots of good things." And then in the middle, where Mor is slipping in over here, the six things that Chizkiyahu did. And that's once we talked about him getting rid of the Book of Cures. So now, the Gemara now will get into the six things that he unilaterally decided. And we'll see how the rabbis responded to it. Tana Rabbanan. The rabbis taught us in a braisa. Shisha Dvarim Asa Chizkiyo HaMelech. Chizkiyo did six things. Al Gimel Hodolo, and three, the rabbis agreed, said, yes, it's a good idea, we agree with you. Val Gimel Lo Hodolo, and on three, they did not agree with him, they said it was not a good idea. Okay. Al Gimel Hodolo, on three, that they acknowledged that he was correct. The first one we already talked about. Gonas Sefer Refuos, he hid the book of remedies, the Hodolo, and they agreed to him that that was a good idea, as we explained yesterday. What? Then there was another thing called the Nachash HaNechoshes, the copper serpent. If you recall, in the desert, when the Jews at the end of their 40 years were complaining about the manna and all that, Hashem sent serpents to bite them and kill them. And Hashem told Moshe to make a copper snake, and they looked at the copper snake, and the plague ended. So after that, the tshuva, and then... So, of course, the healing didn't come. The Mishnah in Tainus says, just looking at a snake gets you better? No. But they looked heavenly word. The snake reminded them of their Avera, and they did Shuvah, and that's why it helped. So, that is so in later years, so they kept that snake as a... artifact to remind people about the event. However, as time passes, people erroneously attributed powers to the snake itself, and therefore they felt, "Oh, well, daven to the snake that we should be." And that's where you get the American Medical Association.
Oh, there you go.
Isn't that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. So, what did he do? He said, "Not good." So, what did he do? He chopped it up. He broke it, he destroyed it. And they said, it's a good idea. Good idea. Now, he had a very terrible father, Chizkiyo, Achaz, really bad father, lots of idol worship. Well, when you die, you're a king, you die, you get a very royal funeral. Not for him. Girer Atzomos, he dragged his bones of Aviv, of his father, Amita Shel Chavolim, on a bed of ropes. Vahodalah, they agreed to him. He dishonored his father publicly rather than a bed of gold and silver as he should be like going through and just slept in there. Why he did that? So his father could get a certain degree of atonement. Because this way, by being humiliated publicly, it showed that, and that brings honor to Hashem through the public humiliation of a Russia. Even though it was his father, but he was a bona fide Russia through and through.
So you don't have to honor him if he's a Russian.
Not Peru takes people away from Yiddishkeit. That's idol was terrible. So he couldn't do anything when his father was alive. After he died, you have to show. There's a new sheriff in town, and we must show the proper disrespect, because that shows respect for God. When people flagrantly, and a leader violates it, that's insulting to God, and you have to stand up for God's rights.
So, you're suffering in this world for atonement, so you have less suffering.
Yeah, even after death, you could suffer.
Yes, it's. You can do atonement for that person.
Yes. What do you think happens on a mystical level after he dies? You know what the mazikim, the destructive angels, do to the body of most people? That's the part that I skipped from the when we're talking about Olam Haba. It's frightening what happens to the body, the soul, all that. It's frightening. So he figured, and whatever he did was nothing compared to what's going to happen in the angelic realm. So yes, there's a, what do you think, Gehenna, you're dead, and you get...
No, but that's the Neshama's again.
Doesn't matter, the body...
Being publicly humiliated.
The soul is connected to the body. The soul is forever connected to the body. You know, let's say like this, Lo Aleinu. You have a parent and a child. So what do? You beat up the child in front of the parent. Oh, it's a different person. What does it matter to me?
No.
No, you're connected. So all the more so, your soul to your body is a great connection. And if the body is humiliated, it's a humiliation for the soul. No question about it. So those three unilateral acts, the rabbi said, good idea. We're all behind you. However, but three things he did, and they did not agree. Number one, there was the Gihon waters, the little Gihon river. What did he do? Sosam me Gihon. He stopped up the Gihon waters. The rabbis did not like this. Why was this?
Why did he stop it?
We're going to see right now. Okay, the army of Sanherib of Assyria. Remember, he was conquering the world. He already exiled the 10 tribes. Now he's approaching Yerushalayim. So Chizkiyo did not want the enemy troops to drink, have any water. So he stopped up the Gihon spring. He figured by doing that, that will, you know, get them to go away. There's no water. What are they going to do? But the rabbi said, not a good idea. He should have relied on Hashem. Right? Hashem promised him explicitly through the prophet that he's going to protect the city. Look what the Navi Yeshaya says. And I will shield this city to save it. When God tells you he's going to save the city, why are you plugging up the Gihon waters? Okay, so look, it's not talking about the Gihon River from the beginning of creation. It's talking about the Gihon spring that's near Yerushalayim, or also called the Shiloach. So he plugged it up because he figured, well, that's my effort to stop the Assyrians. Big mistake. If Hashem says he's going to protect you, you're going to see at the end what happened anyway, right?
But you have to help yourself. Hashem helped.
Yeah, but not to make Yerushalayim less attractive.
Oh.
Remember, Yerushalayim is the most beautiful city in the entire world. And part of that is the physical beauty and the Gihon River. And that's for people to enjoy the water. It was also important because in the Beis HaMikdash you needed water and you had close access to water. So what are you doing that for? Hashem said, I'm going to shield you. So what are you doing these kinds of things? How did he save him anyway? Remember? Sancheriv parks his troops right outside Yerushalayim. Sancheriv thought, remember, they didn't have TV. They didn't have any, internet to know what Yerushalayim looked like. All he knew was, oh, Jerusalem, this is their most powerful city. Most powerful city. So he imagined. So he, after conquering the world, he conquers the 10 tribes. He comes to Shalim. It's like a nothing compared to big, big countries. It's nothing. He said, this was the big thing. This is going to be the big battle. You know what? We could party now. We'll conquer it tomorrow. It's a big party. And then that night, God wiped them out. Wiped Sacharov off. Just sent a plague and wiped them out that night. So you didn't have to plug up the Gihon River. Hashem says he's going to take care of you. So that's one thing he did that they did not approve of. Number two, Kitzatz Dalsos Heichal. He cut the doors off of the temple. Vishigram HaMelech Ashur. He sent them to the king of Ashur. They did not acquiesce to that. Now, what's that? After Chizkiah's initial rebellion against Sancheriv, Sancheriv demanded a heavy tribute from him in return for the withdrawal of his armies. So what did Chizkiah do? He emptied the treasuries of the king and the temple, and he didn't have enough money. So he cut the golden doors from the temple and sent it there. But some say he stripped the gold off of the doors, whatever. And the rabbi said that wasn't proper. You should have trusted in Hashem. All he's doing is threatening you economically. You don't denigrate the holy temple because of that. Mm-hmm. The third one's a little trickier. Of our Nisan, Benisan, Velo Hodolo. We know that every 7 out of 19 years, you intercalate the Jewish calendar by adding the month of Adar. Adar Beis. Now the question is, when is the latest time that you can add the month of Adar? Yes, when can you add the month of Adar? Now you can decide, and you can't do it too early, but you could, you know, if it's getting close to Adar, say, oh, it looks like there's a number of things you have to look at, signs to show that we should make an extra month. And you could decide before the Adar, you could say this is gonna be Adar Rishon, it's gonna be Adar Beis. What if for whatever you weren't sure yet and you're ready in Adar? Can you still intercalate and say, well, this will be Adar Aleph? So you can, but you can't do it in the month of Nisan. Once it's Nisan 1,
too late.
You can't say, well, let's do Adar Beis. A little too late. So we've got to be careful here. So what did he do? He intercalated the calendar year in Nisan. Okay, that's what he did. That's all this whole explanation. We can skip all this. Okay, now, the incident with Chizkiyahu took place at the beginning of his reign after the death of his father Achaz. During Achaz's reign, most Jews worship idols and were consequently tamei, because according to rabbinic law, even if you don't touch a dead person, if you touch an idol, you're rabbinically tamei. Okay, so Chizkiyahu is bringing the Jews back to Yiddishkeit, but he knew there's no way he's going to get them purified before Pesach. Okay, he seemed to get all the people to do tshuva. Remember, we said lots of tshuva. So now that there's no way he's going to get every. Remember, if you're tummy, you can't bring korban pesach. It's rabbinic tumah, but still, that's a tumah that you need to have the paraduma ashes sprinkled on you, water sprinkled on you. So it must have been like hundreds of thousands of Jews. He says, no way we're going to get it on time for Pesach. So what does he do? He intercalates the month of Adar. Now, could be there weren't physical factors, you know, of the spring and all that, but he felt it's very important to give another month. So after lots of time for people to purify themselves. Now, the Gemara at this point assumes incorrectly that Chizkiyahu extended the year after the month of Nisan was already proclaimed, and calling, let's say, at Nisan 1 or Nisan 2, he says that was the month of Adar. Okay, look at the Pesukim. It says, and the king and his nobles and all the community took counsel in Jerusalem to render the Pesach offering in the second month. Now, if the intercalation was performed in a normal manner by adding a 13th month to the end of the year, the verse would have stayed in sacrifice once he brought in the first month of Nisan. He's calling Nisan the second Nisan. Why does the verse speak of bringing sacrifice in the second month? Maybe second month. Emily, the intercalation was not performed until after the sanctification of Nisan, which marked the beginning of a new year. The intercalary month accordingly became the first month of the new year. While see what's happening here. It's not really Adar Beis. It's Nisan 1. And then Nisan 2. Okay, that's what it means. He did it on the second month. How do you do the second month? The only way you can make Nisan be the second month is by intercalating a Nisan instead of an Adar. So that's what the Gemara thought the Pesukim meant to say. To which the Gemara is going to say, that crazy, he wasn't Chizkiyahu. Gemara says, doesn't Chizkiyahu clearly agree to what it says explicitly in the Torah? Where the Torah says, HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem Rosh Chodeshim, this month will be the beginning of the months. Rosh Chodesh Nisan is the first month. Zeh Nisan, this is Nisan. Ve'ein Achar Nisan. And there's no other month to ever be Nisan. Meaning to say, this pasuk teaches that in the count of lunar months, the new year must begin with Nisan. Accordingly, once Bezin begins a new year by sanctifying the month of Nisan, it may not then designate this month as an intercalary month, since this would render Nisan with its attendant laws and festivals the second month of the year. Right? Nisan's the first month where you have Pesach. Now you're going to make Nisan the second month where you have Pesach. So he could not have ignored an overt verse. So he got everybody to tshuva. He would go against the Torah. Now, the question is based upon its initial interpretation of Chizkiyahu's act, that after first proclaiming the month of Nisan, Chizkiyahu then rendered it an intercalary month. So now the Gemara is going to answer, that's not exactly what happened. What happens is as follows. What happens if you've got Adar? So you can intercalate the Adar even until the very last day of Adar. Okay. It's the 29th of Adar. Oh, it doesn't look like it's going to work out for us this year.
First of Adar.
It's on the 29th, even though you've read the Megillah, you've done everything, you can still say, no, we're going to make another Adar. That's okay. You're still in the safe zone, so you just do Purim again. Whatever. Ah, but what if it's a day where it could be the first of Nisan? Let's say it's the 30th of Adar. 30th of Adar is still 30th of Adar, but it could have been the first of Nisan, because sometimes it's 29, sometimes it's 30. So you're going to see that the ruling is, if you're going to intercalate Adar, you can't do it on that day 30 of Adar, because since it could be misconstrued to be Nisan, you can't do it then. So what did he do? He did it then. That's the mistake he made. So that's what I was going
to
explain.
But don't you have to intercalate the month for the proper reason? He had a whole different reason because he was trying to buy time.
Listen, you usually have certain visible signs that say the roads are very much. What's happening? What's happening is that Nisan is getting earlier by 11 days every year. Right? So when you begin to see that Pesach is going to be in March, and let's say like March 15th, and you start looking around in February and beginning of March, wow, everything's so wet, the roads are bad. There's a lot of real just technical things in terms of can we... Obviously, if it's too cold and too wintry, it's going to be very hard to celebrate Pesach. That's really what it's about. So let's say the roads are muddy. How are people going to travel from far away and get to Yerushalayim on time? Right? It's that kind of thing, not so much a astrological calculation, because we know you got to do it 7 times over 19 years. You'll always keep it in the zone. But it doesn't have to be bedafka, you know, once and then you break 2 months and this. You know you got a little bit of a range here. So therefore, you have a little flexibility. So it could be you could, once in a long while, you know, maybe you could have 2 leap years in a row, whatever. So it really, it's really up to the Beis Din, and they can, I'm not going to say arbitrarily, but they could say what's best for the Jews to celebrate Pesach this year. That's the bottom line. It's usually weather related. But it doesn't have to be weather-related, because he said, listen, how are all these Jews going to be able to get themselves purified? That's no less important in the celebration of Pesach than the roads being muddy and you can't get there. Or the you can't cut the wheat properly and the matzah won't be kosher because it's too moist and this and that. These are the factors they have to deal with. Well, obviously, if everybody's tummy mace, that's a factor you have to deal with, right? So what happened? Elata, he made a mistake, Bidishmuel, with a future rendering of a rule that Shmuel would make, that the rabbis already knew. Damar Shmuel, Shmuel says, Ein ma'abrin ha'sashana, you don't intercalate the year, b'yom shloshim shalad, on the 30th day of Adar, even though it is actually Adar. See, what happens is, on the night of the 30th, first 29 days of the month is the old month. When does the new month begin? So on the night of the 30th, you send out people outside to look for that new moon. So on the 30th, you could start looking. And if they'd find it, it would be Nisan the next day. So what does he do? On the 30th, he says, you know what? I don't care if we saw anything. I've decided to make it Ador Sheni. We're going to make this Rosh Chodesh Ador Sheni. Even though it was the 30th and no new moon was seen. But still, you can't do it on the 30th. Why? Because it could have been, if we would have seen a moon, it could have been. So, Hoel, Veroy Lakovo, since it's eligible to be designated as the first day of Nisan, you can't do it. And that's, he's basically talking this. So Shmuel therefore maintains the restriction against intercalating on Nisan applies even on the 30th day of Adar, whether or not it has been proclaimed Nisan. Okay, this only by rabbinic law, we can't do this, right? It's not biblical. And so therefore, that's what Shmuel said. So why did Chizkio do it? Because he disagreed with that point. Sorry, says, Hol v'roi lo aminin. Since it's possible it would be eligible, that's not enough to make it that I can't intercalate. You know, I disagree with that point. The Gemara now realized it was not during Nisan that Chizkiah extended the previous year, but on the 30th of Adar. He assumed that since the new year had not yet been proclaimed, this was permissible. The sages objected, like Shmuel. Okay, so that's the idea. So this is according to the Tana of Rav Shimon. But you'll see there's a Bryce in Sanhedrin, that's what you remember. It states that Chizkiah repented of this Avera and prayed for Hashem to forgive him. So we've had it already before. Okay, anyway, so that's why he was saying. So now, we come back to our story here. So what did Chizkiah do? He prayed. He prayed by the wall. And we said, what do you mean he prayed by the wall? We have a few interpretations. And one said, well, listen, I have merits. And because of my merits, you should save me. So now the Gemara just follows up. Amar Rav Yochanan, Mishum Rav Yossi ben Zimra. Rav Yochanan says, Kol ha-toyla b'schus atzmo. Anyone who depends on his own merits when he prays. When he says, Hashem, save me because I deserve. I've done a lot of good things for you. And I have that merit. So even if Hashem will answer you, but tolin lo b'schus acher, they're going to make the fulfillment dependent on others. Yeah. Okay, in other words, Hashem is going to say, I answered you, but not because of your merits, because of somebody else. And the reverse, anybody who wants to be saved when he prays because of other people's merits, then Hashem will do it, I'll do it because of your merits. And what's the example over here? You'll see. This is how we come back to Chizkiah. Moshe, when he prayed, he depended on the merits of others. When he wanted the Jews to be forgiven for the sin of the golden calf, what does he say? Shenemar, Zechor, remember, La'avram li'yisrael li'shavadecha. Remember the three patriarchs. Save the Jews in the merit of the three patriarchs. He could have said, save in my merit. Look at all the things I did for these people. He didn't. And therefore what happened? Tolalo b'schusatz. And then Hashem said, you know what? I'm going to save him because of you. How do we know that? Shenemar, the pasuk says, Vayomer. And he said, Lahashmidem, Hashem, he spoke to destroy them. Lule Moshe Bechiro, had it not been for Moshe, his chosen one. Amad Baperetz, and Moshe stood at the breach, Lefonav, Lahashiv Chamasam, Yashas, to turn away the anger from Hashem. So therefore we see what's up to Moshe, even though Moshe was not relying on his merits. Now the upside, and this is the one that connects to our story. Chizkiyahu tolo b'schus atzmo. He said it should be in his merit. Tichsiv, and that's what we quoted above. Zechor no'as asher yisalachti lefanecha. Remember the way in which I walked before you, truthfully and hopefully, all the good things I did. So when Hashem did answer him, he did answer him, and he took away his sickness. But Talalobis was the Hashem made it dependent on others' merits. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, when Hashem answered his prayer, and he says, Veganosi Eloir Azos, and I will shield the city, Lahoshia, to save it, Lama'ani, for my sake, Hashem says, Ulaman David Avdi, and in the merit of David, my servant. Not in Chizkiyahu. Okay, now this interesting. He's saying, it's interesting here. This is the whole question here. The incident in which Yishai and Chizkiyah took place in the context of Sanher's approach to Jerusalem for war. When God answered Chizkiyah's prayer with a promise of healing, he promised as well to protect Jerusalem from Sanher. Can you imagine what kind of pressure he was under? Sanher is attacking him, and he's deathly ill. So he's praying to God. So Hashem promised two things. You'll get better and we'll save Yerushalayim. But they were made in the merit of David and not in Chizkiyah's merit. Now, the little problem with the text. Now, the verse given here is part of a prophecy that came to Isaiah 3 days after his illness in response to Chizkiyah's prayer for protection against Sanherib. It's odd then that the Gemara offers this verse as a proof that Chizkiyah's earlier prayer for healing was answered in the merit of others. There's a variant text that substitutes for this verse, one dealing both with God's pledge to heal Chizkiyah and his pledge to shield the city. So they bring a whole other pasuk. And he says, I will add to your days 15 years. From the palm of the king of Assyria, I will save you in the city and I will protect the city for my sake and for the sake of my servant David. This should have been the pasuk, according to many, should have been brought. It thus provides clear proof that Chizkiah's prayer for healing was answered not in his own merit, but the merit of King David. So that's, they say, really should have maybe brought the other pasuk. Be that as it may, that's the point, that he was saved, but not in his own merit. But it proved the point that even when the sword is to the neck, Hashem will still save you. So it doesn't matter. So that's what happened. And indeed, he married the Navi's daughter. He had kids. And sure enough, Menashe came and undid everything he did and brought the Jewish people back to the worst stages of idol worship. Why does Hashem do those things? And that's what he said. The secrets of Hashem, you let Hashem worry about it. He knows what he's doing. Don't interfere with history. And now, just to repeat this last point, Vahainu Rabbi Shua ben Levi, and this is similar to what Rabbi Shua ben Levi said. To Rabbi Shua ben Levi, he said, "My dichsiv, what does the pasuk mean?" And this begins, it was written by Chizkiyo in thanking Hashem for the miracle. After he was saved, he thanked Hashem. So he writes, "Hine l'sholom mar limar. Behold the peace, it is bitter for me, a bitterness." What are you talking about? If you got saved and this peaceful, what could be so bitter about it? The answer is, afilu b'shah sheshigal HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even at the time that Hashem sent Chizkiyo peace and the healing, mar hu lo, it was bitter for him because he knew it did not come in his merit. So it's kind of being saved on someone else's account. That's not exactly the best way to hear that. Okay, now part of his prayer was, he says, remember that the Shunammite woman, she just built one wall for the prophet, and you went and revived her son. And look at my ancestor made walls for the Beis HaMikdash, they should save me. So now this is a segue to the Shunammite woman who built this wall for the Navi. What was the story over there? So that's the segue into that next sugya, where the pasuk says, the Shunammite woman, when the prophet Elisha was visiting them, she says to her husband, Nase no alias kir katana. Let us now make, the Hebrew words are alias kir. And that's where it's going to debate exactly what those two words mean. And besides the kir, we're going to have a bed, a table, a chair, a lamp, and when he comes, he could be over there. Now the question is, what is alias kir? Because really, aliyah simply means a second floor, but a kir means a wall. It's kind of oxymoron. Is it a ceiling or a wall? The way you translate literally, a walled ceiling or a ceiling wall. That's what it's going to say. That's going to be the machlokas. Rav Shmuel, they both have a debate. What do those words mean? Chadamar once said, you know what they made? Aliyah pruisa. There was, the upper roof was previously unroofed. V'kirah, they roofed it. Now they made a second floor. So now he goes to the second floor. V'chadamar no. Ach sadra gedola hoisa. There was a big hall. It was a large room on the first floor. V'chakulisham, they split in two by putting a wall to make it a second floor. So therefore, you got the two variant interpretations. The Gemara says, Bishlema, that's all good and well, Amand Rech Sad. You want to say it was a big hall when he put a wall? Hang deceived kir. That's why it says a kir. Kir is a wall. Elamand Rech Aliyah, but the one says it was a roof. My kir. What does it mean, a kir, a wall? Well, the truth is, you can take the word kir and make it into a verb, because walls can go in two directions. A wall can go this way. A wall can go this way. It's just a ceiling. So it means shikirua. They roofed it. Because you see, the word tikra in Hebrew is the same root as kir. Kir is a wall. Tikra is a roof. They share the two letters kuf resh. Means it could be a wall this way, this wall like this way. So he answers that. Now, the other way, Bishlema, that's good. Lamana really says it's a ceiling. Heinrich Siv Aliyah. It says a ceiling, an upper chamber. Elaman Damar Achsar, one says it was a big room and they put a wall. My Aliyah, what does it mean, an Aliyah, an upper chamber? Answer is, well, Aliyah can have another root from the word Me'ula, the best. So they made Me'ula Shebabatim. They made it the best of the rooms. So again, they gave him a high quality room. They made it into a good big suite like that. Okay, do another two lines. So now she says, okay, we'll make a wall. Let's finish the story there. V'nasim lo shem, we're going to put over there a mita, a bed, v'shulchan, a table, a kisei, a chair, a menorah, and a lamp. Amar Abaye, Abaye says, he said, some say, Rizak. Now, it comes out, Elisha benefited from the people being nice to him. He got free accommodations. So there's a whole debate. should a person receive gifts from other people? So obviously she made the room for him and he accepted it. So he accepted the gift. So Rabbi Yitzchak says, we see from this story the following, this and another story. Harod Selahanis, a one who wants to get benefit from other people, you're allowed to. If someone offers you to do you a favor, you're allowed to take it, as you see, Kelisha, like Elisha, who was willing to take the favor. Right? Okay, so interesting, a whole story, but I don't have to go there. Visha'eda writes on us, but if you don't want to benefit, you don't have to benefit. Refusing it is not considered being arrogant. And if you don't want it, you don't have to take it. And what's the story of that? Kishmuel Haramasi. We see from Shmuel. Why? Because Shmuel was an itinerant shofet. He would travel from city to city to judge people, which was his virtue. But where do you stay? Well, look what happened. Shenemer, it says, as he would go, look at the pasuk says, he would travel year after year, and he would go around to Basel and Gilgal and Mitzpah. He would judge Israel in all of its places. And his return was to Ramah, for his home was there. The rabbis learned from that, on those words, Utshuvasa Ramasa Kisham Beso, when he returned to Ramah, his house was there. From Rabbi Yochanan, why is the Pasuk have to say that? Obviously he would be returning. But the answer is, Shekol Makam Shahalach, wherever he went, Sham Beso, he took his home with him. What does that mean? He took his tent, he took his pots. He packed up like going on a camping trip because he did not want to stay in anybody's house. So therefore, he didn't want to benefit from others. There is an idea. Shlomo Melech says, Sone matanos yichye. He who hates gifts will live. There is an advantage to not accepting gifts from others. On the other hand, you make the people feel good. So they say you have an option. If you want, you can benefit. If you don't want, you don't have a benefit. You have on whom to rely on. Okay.